the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you this morning?
Boker Tov, each day seems to be almost like a month in news terms with everything going on yesterday. But even before we talk about some of the things that went down yesterday, we had a discussion about Israel being the ninth happiest country in the world. Mm-hmm. And now there's a report that's come out saying that Israel ranks second as the least affordable country to buy property in the world. I don't know how that connects with the happiness survey.
Yeah, one wouldn't think that would link.
But what's interesting about this is that it's all about affordability of buying property in terms of local Israelis rather than foreigners looking here to buy property, because this is a study that examines average price per square meter in relation to the average disposable household income in Israel. And whereas the survey suggests that the average price per square meter is, relatively speaking, not too expensive, around $7,500 per square meter, the issue is that the average disposable income is, relatively speaking, low. And so therefore, when you compare the price versus the disposable income, Israel's affordability ratio comes out to something like 30%, which is only better than South Korea in the world, which is also an interesting country just to think about. We're told that Luxembourg is in third place as the least affordable country to buy property in the world. So just I thought that might be of interest to some people. I know a lot of people look here to buy property from abroad. Again, this is not really about foreigners looking to buy property and trying to assess the relative price of property here.
Absolutely. Getting on to some of the news yesterday, terrible, terrible day, in fact, in Israel. Four people killed in a terror incident, murdered in a terror incident in Be'er Sheva yesterday. What happened?
Well, what happened, I mean, the actual sort of dry facts of the events yesterday was that the individual who was responsible for committing this terror attack left home with a knife and then along his way popped into a petrol station, and he happened to drive over a person who was riding a bicycle in that particular petrol station and killed him literally on the spot. Then went on to stop at another petrol station along the way where he murdered another lady, and then went on to a shopping center area where he stabbed a further two people, both of whom died, before he was eventually neutralized. Now, the events of his neutralization are in themselves quite interesting because there is a video online, which anybody could watch if they so wish to do so, which shows how he was neutralized. And the person who was responsible for bringing the situation under control is Arthur Chaimov, who is a bus driver. He drives for Eged in Be'er Sheva, and he witnessed the events going on around him as he drove his bus, stopped his bus, took his weapon, which he carried with him in the bus, and then went out of his bus to confront this individual who was running around with the knife above his head, threatening to stab people. And the video shows, I've watched it more than once because I found it just to be a fascinating piece of real life terror that went on yesterday. And the video shows that Arthur Chaimov approached the terrorist with his weapon drawn, asking him twice or three times to drop his knife without showing not even an inch of any fear that he might become a victim. He moved forward on this individual. He didn't try to stay away from him and move backwards. He moved forward and kept on stalking him, asking him to put the knife down twice or three times. The individual went backwards a little bit, and then at one point you just see the terrorist come forward with the knife raised above his head in order to attack Chaimov. And as he literally raises his hand to attack him, you see the bullet, the firearm is discharged, and the terrorist just falls right there. I mean, it's kind of a split second, before the knife comes down in order to carry out that attack on the individual. Literally an amazing piece of video evidence. And then when Arthur Chaimov was interviewed afterwards, he was asked what he did after he shot that individual. And he said what he did was he ran to the nearest policeman and he begged him to call an ambulance very quickly in order to try and help save the life of the individual who had just shot. And he kept on talking about how this was a terrible waste of life and how he also was a human being and how he almost expressed his regret about the loss of life that he had been forced to cause. I mean, there's nobody who can turn around and say this wasn't justified.
That he had another option.
When you see that video, when you see that video, there's nobody who can have any doubt about the fact that there was only one outcome of that particular event. Logical outcome of that particular event. So a very, very tragic incident. Two mothers leaving young children behind, two women who went out to do their shopping in Beersheba, as you would do on a normal day, and didn't come home safely. A Chabad emissary riding his bicycle, running a soup kitchen in Beersheba for the last 10 years, simply driven over and killed without any justification. A man in his 60s, whose nephew, we understand, came to the scene as one of the first responders, as a first aider, but was unable to save his life. These are the people who lost their lives yesterday unnecessarily. The attacker, we understand, is a Negev Bedouin, someone who was on the radar of the security services, who has been arrested before, who has been even sentenced to prison before for his links with ISIS and for his terrorist inclinations. He was given a relatively light sentence because the judge in the case felt that he had genuinely expressed his remorse for incidents that he was being sentenced for. And so the sentence that he received was relatively light on that occasion, but was released in order to come and carry out this spree of terrorism. What I find very, very fascinating is that Bedouin and Arab organizations in Israel have all come around and condemned this attack without any hesitation. Even the Arab political parties sitting in the Knesset, who traditionally are not so eager and enthusiastic to come out and to criticize events of this sort, have all come out and strongly condemned these events, which I think is a different situation than the one that we've seen in the past. The municipality of Hura, where the individual lived, in the Negev, also came out saying that this is not the way that we like to do business. Violence is not our way. We do not in any way associate ourselves with the events that were carried out by one of the citizens of our town. The only organization that has come out hailing this event is Palestinian Islamic Jihad, as one might expect. They thought that this was a very, very good event. And they claim that this is a good way to try to somehow stand up against the possible establishment of a civilian group in the Negev area, which has been touted by somebody, a civilian battalion of some sort, to try to bring safety to the Negev area. They think that this is exactly the right response to carry out this attack. I don't believe in having civilian security, people taking security upon themselves without proper coordination with the security forces. So that particular idea of establishing a civilian corps is really not a good one unless it's done very much in conjunction with the security services. Mm-hmm. But really that had nothing to do with yesterday's events.
Absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. Also very concerning is that there are claims that the next wave of corona has started in Israel. What is the story?
Yeah, 13,000, 14,000 new cases currently being diagnosed each day. And so this is a significant uptick in the numbers, and it seems to be growing gradually as we head in towards the Pesach holiday and the period which follows that, where there are a number of holidays. We were followed by Yom HaTzma'ut and Lag BaOmer, and of course Shavuot at the end of the 7-week period after Pesach. So we're heading into springtime and we're heading into a holiday period, and unfortunately the number of people diagnosed with corona is going up. Luckily, currently the hospitals seem to be coping very well. Not that many people considered to be seriously ill. Still a relatively high number of people who have been vaccinated. Some interesting information coming out about the effectiveness or potentially the lack of effectiveness of the fourth vaccine. They claim that people under 60 really didn't get a great deal of extra protection from the fourth vaccine. Let's also remember that the vaccinations now are quite generally considered not to be effective preventing you from getting corona, but rather they're effective in somehow reducing the impact of the illness on you. At one stage, the vaccine was considered to be good to protect you, that you would not catch the virus. Now they're saying it's all about boosting T cells and making sure that in the event that you do catch the virus, that at least, you know, you're able to overcome it and to recover pretty quickly and pretty easily. And I think overall, that's probably what we're seeing up until now. There are some indications that we may need to somehow pull back on some of the restrictions that have been lifted. Currently, the only restriction that's in place is that people are still expected to wear masks indoors. To say that I see people doing this according to the rules, I don't. There are a lot of people who don't, and I see a lot of people giving up on the requirement to wear masks, and it's certainly not being policed in any meaningful way. But there may well be just another little pullback. People might want to get back into their masks again indoors. There are people who wear masks indoors, but I don't think it's universally adhered to. And there is some talk about the possibility of implementing mask wearing outdoors again. So that's currently what's been spoken about, not much more than that, and certainly no talks about lockdowns or potentially limiting freedom over Pesach, which of course is the festival of our freedom, and we don't want to limit our freedom over Pesach. So no talk about that at the moment, but I'm guessing that if the numbers do tick up more significantly, that there will need to be a reevaluation of that situation.
Let's hope not. The Minister of Defence has given the go-ahead for the development of a laser air defence system. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is a very fascinating development, and one which I don't think comes as a huge surprise to us. But when we see these things actually becoming reality, I think it's quite exciting. First of all, 500 million shekels of government money has been put into placing an order already for the development and the production of a high power laser system, which will be used to intercept rockets and mortar shells. Mortar shells is really important because up until now, there's been a slight gap in Israel's air defense system, and mortar shells have been the key weakness because Israel didn't have the ability to effectively intercept the short range nature of the firing of mortar shells. It only takes a few seconds for them to be fired into the target. And during that time, it's very, very difficult to get enough a response together in order to somehow prevent these mortar shells from hitting their target. So this new laser system, the an anti-air system, is supposedly going to be the answer not only to mortar shells, but potentially even to intercepting rockets. And even though the way that it's being presented right now is that this will sit alongside the Iron Dome, it wouldn't surprise me if in the fullness of time, something like this would actually entirely replace the Iron Dome and the purpose that it's been used for up until now. Two Israeli companies will be developing and manufacturing this particular system. Rafael is the lead in the lead company in developing it, but will also be helped not only by other Israeli companies, but I'm guessing that there will indeed be Elbit being the second company that will be working with Rafael, but I'm sure that there will be an entire industry around this. And Chief of the Defense Minister Benny Gantz actually visited Rafael in order to investigate the development of this particular system. And what I understand is that they've managed to somehow develop this high intensity beam, this very powerful laser emitter, that is a technological breakthrough and that will really enable, will power the system. But in the fullness of time, I understand that they could even attach these systems to aircraft so that an airplane will be able to use it in flight in order to hit missiles that could be aimed at Israel, intercepting them potentially even before, long before they approach their targets from the air, and also at the same time protecting the airplane itself. So this seems to be a technology and a system that could go a fairly long way in being used in a number of different applications. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if suddenly they came up with a naval version, which could be installed on a Navy ship and be used to protect the ship itself, and also potentially intercept missiles that are heading towards other targets nearer the shore. So this seems to be quite a significant development. And interestingly, according to the timeline, it could be ready as soon as the end of next year, although I always have the tendency to add on 6 months to a year on these targeted dates. But it's a relatively short-term development, and it's not something that we're going to have to wait for our grandchildren to enjoy. This is something that we could still see within the next year or two.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM. Good morning.